Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for The Christophers, and today I'll be talking with two Americans who reached for the stars, but they did it in different ways. First up will be the conclusion of my interview with former NASA astronaut Mike Massimino, talking about the challenges he faced in becoming an astronaut and how those lessons can apply to us all. After that, Olympic gold medalist Simone Biles will discuss her own road to success and the role that her Catholic faith played in getting her there. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and first up today is the conclusion of my interview with former NASA astronaut Mike Massimino. Mike is a veteran of two space shuttle missions, and he played the key role in saving the Hubble telescope. On our last show, Mike talked about that experience and how seeing Earth during a spacewalk gave him a new perspective on God and heaven and the beauty that surrounds us every day. Well, today Mike, who has just written a memoir called Spaceman, will touch on the life lessons he learned on the road to becoming an astronaut and why humor can be a great leadership tool. So here now is the conclusion of my Christopher Close-Up conversation with Mike Massimino. I just want to go back to your earlier astronaut days, because I know that the movie The Right Stuff kind of reignited your passion to be an astronaut. What was so special about that movie, especially in light of the fact that we just lost John Glenn recently?
Yeah, John, that movie, as we were talking earlier in our discussion, I got inspired by the Apollo guys, and then I kind of forgot about being an astronaut because I thought it was impossible. And then when I was in college, I went to see the movie The Right Stuff, and it really inspired me to get interested in the space program again. And I started noticing, the basic ideas that I got out of the movie were the camaraderie between the astronauts and the view out the window, the view of the Earth. Mm-hmm. That was something I really wanted more than anything. And again, but I realized it was still maybe impossible. But at that point, the space program had changed. It wasn't just test pilots. It was NASA did have some scientists as astronauts in the 60s, but in the Apollo program, it was mainly test pilots who flew in space. One geologist, Harrison Schmitt, did walk on the moon. A civilian geologist, but it was, other than that, it was military test pilots. But it had changed once we got into the Skylab era, and then it changed a lot with the shuttle era, and there were people of color and people of different sizes. I would have been too tall to be an Apollo astronaut. Mm-hmm. But the people of color, different gender, and first women were picked, for example. The first African-Americans and Hispanic astronauts were picked with the shuttle program. And it were also a lot of scientists out of that group, a lot of scientists and engineers, civilians, not just predominantly test pilots. There was also military test pilots in there as well. There always, sure, I think, will be. But it made it more like maybe someone who was kind of more like me, maybe as an engineer, which I was almost finishing up engineering school at the time. And I thought, well, maybe this is something I can get involved in, or at least try. Maybe it isn't as crazy as I thought.
Yeah.
So, I didn't really do much about it for a while. It took me about a year or so to really start acting on it. But I decided that after working for a while after college, I wanted to go to grad school and do whatever I could to become an astronaut. And that's what I did.
Yeah. Well, were there people in your life who saw potential in you that you yourself didn't know you had?
Yeah, I talk about that a lot in the book. I think that we don't always see what the value of is in us, and also our shortcomings too. It's I think sometimes we get told more about our shortcomings than we do in our potential. But there were teachers when I was in high school. There was a social studies teacher I had, Mr. Stern, that I write about. He saw that, he thought I could go to a good college, and I didn't really. I thought, well, maybe I could, but he's like, no, you could. I think you'd be do well in this, this sort of school. And I was like, oh, wow, that'd be pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then also there were other people who was a mentor of mine who I still stay in touch with, our friend Jim McDonald, who's I think a very spiritual guy and a good guy. And, he befriended me as a young person. And, when I was working with him in a summer job after my junior year in college, this is before I saw the Right Stuff. Mm-hmm. But he saw that I was a little bit different, I think, than most of the other engineering students, and that I was looking to do something maybe a little bit different, maybe a little more meaningful. Maybe I was a little more sensitive, or I don't know what he saw in me, but he saw something in me that was a little bit different. And throughout my life, different points. This is a long time ago, and this is almost a long time ago, over 30 years ago that I met Jim, like 33 years ago, mm-hmm. almost 34 years ago. And at different points throughout my life, I would check in with him and would get a little course direction, you know, a little navigation from him in life. And I think it's really important to have someone like that. I was very lucky to have Jim to help me out.
Yeah, I'm talking to author Mike Massimino. He's a former NASA astronaut. His book is called Spaceman, An Astronaut's Unlikely Journey to Unlock the Secrets of the Universe. Now, you write that a professor of yours, speaking of your mentors and stuff, there's a professor named Tom Sheridan who once gave you the bit mm-hmm. of advice, if you can learn to live with indignities in life, you can go far. Why did that insight serve you so well?
Well, because I think what Tom was saying in a very nice MIT intellectual way, if you can endure indignities, what he's saying is if you can get knocked down on your butt and get back up again, you can go far. Because I think when you're trying to do something that's difficult, you're stretching yourself in ways that are not comfortable, or you're trying to do something that is hard, you're gonna meet with failure, mm-hmm. and you're going to get knocked down. You're going to get told no. You're going to get rejected. You're not going to always be successful. And I think if you learn how to put up with that and keep going and not cower, but regroup, give yourself a little bit of time to recover from a loss or a bad experience or a failure or whatever it might be. Give yourself a little bit of time to recover, not too long. Cause you got to get back up on your feet and keep trying. And mm-hmm. I see that in a lot of successful people that, every successful person has met with failure, but hasn't let that stop them. And you just got to keep going. And if you're going to be thin skinned in that way and say, it's never going to happen for me, I'm just going to give up. Then you're not going to be successful. But if you're able to deal with failure, learn from it and keep moving on, you can go far.
Yeah. Well, one of the, I think the keys to success is being a good leader. And anybody who's been listening to this interview today knows that humor is a big part of your personality. And you write in the book that humor actually was a good leadership tool for you. How did humor work its way in? Because it's not, it's not a leadership aspect that people automatically think of.
No, but I think what I found, when you're in a leadership position, you do the best you can. But NASA tried to teach us leadership by having us do these field exercises in these extreme environments, and with the National Outdoor Leadership School. And I did another exercise with the Canadian Army, which was interesting. It was a cold weather course that we took, and so you're uncomfortable and not feeling well, and you take turns being leader for the day, you're in charge of setting the tone for the day and the plan and telling people what to do. And that is typically, we're going to go to this point and that point. We're going to hike here, hike there. We're going to do these experiments along the way. We're going to stop here for lunch. We're going to find a campground here. We're going to get food and water here, whatever it might be for that exercise for the day. And everyone's got to listen to you. On the first one of these I went on, I was actually on the same team as the head of our office, named Charlie Precourt, who was a Air Force colonel and the head chief astronaut and a shuttle commander, and he was our boss. And so, there was a day where I had to tell him what to do, and he had to be a good follower. It's not just leadership, it's also followership, learning mm-hmm. how to follow the leader. What I discovered was that I relied on my personality, I guess, is just what I had. And I tried to, this is natural for me maybe to make a joke or say something that people thought would be funny. And so in our debriefs, this rough, gruff Canadian Army guy was named Colin Norris, was this guy's name. I have a picture of him in my book of our little expedition there. And he's a tough guy, Army guy from Canada, sergeant. And he was making comments on all of our leadership styles because he was the instructor. And he said, what I would do is I would set the plan and then I'd make a joke and everyone would laugh and then something would happen and we'd fix it and then I would make a joke and we'd move on. He says it's hard for people to do that, mm-hmm. he said, but it's a very effective leadership style. And I was like, wow, that's something. And This happened to me another one of these things. I was with my second crew, and the same thing came out. They said, you know, the way, you know, caring about people and being funny and using humor is effective if you're good at it. It's not for everybody, but if you live your life, you know, that way, then it could also be incorporated in your leadership style. If you try to adopt, like if I would try to be a tough guy barking out orders and telling people what to do, like in General Patton, that's not going to work for me.
Yeah.
You know, but incorporating what you have, use all your skills, which includes your personality traits. And if you're a serious person, don't try to be funny, I guess, is the idea. And if you're a funny person, don't try to be serious. Try to be yourself, even when you're leading people. And another time, again, what I was going to say is one of my buddies, Mike Good, was saying how he had, as I was getting the same debrief more or less a few years later on a different exercise, you know, Bueno, my buddy Mike Good said he had a squadron commander who was like that one time when he was in the Air Force and everybody loved him, you know. That was, if you have those traits, you should use them.
Yeah. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to the humorous Mike Massimino about his great memoir, Spaceman, an astronaut's unlikely journey to unlock the secrets of the universe. Just a couple more questions. I wanted to touch on one thing because, you know, you're a guy who's walked in space. You've faced death going into space because it is a dangerous thing. And it's even though you felt that fear, in the book you write that one of the other greatest moments of fear in your life was throwing out the first pitch at a Mets game. So I want to know, why did that scare you so much?
Well, because you could bounce it. If you bounce the ball, you know, you're remembered forever. And I remember when I first became an astronaut, just about a month into it, I was down at the Kennedy Space Center. And my friend Brent Jett, who was a test pilot extraordinaire, an astronaut pilot. He was just an amazing guy, just like what I would say, you know, the coolest kind of pilot you can imagine, right stuff kind of guy, was telling me how he threw a pitch out at a Baltimore Orioles game.
Mm-hmm.
And he was coming off the mound, and Davey Johnson was the manager of the Orioles at the time and threw him a ball and say, would you mind autographing this for my kid?
Mm-hmm.
And Brent said, sure. And he grabbed the pen, and he realized his hand was shaking.
Uh-huh.
And I remember this, that he said that, because he said his hand never shook before.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy that, you know, was a test pilot, flew combat, landed the space shuttle, but yet throwing out a pitch at a major league game, had his hand shaking. So I didn't take it, I didn't take it lightly, and I wanted to make sure that I didn't bounce it. So that's why I practiced. I got ready for that experience too.
Well, that's good. As a lifelong Mets fan myself, I was happy to read that was such a big moment in your life.
Oh yeah, it was huge.
All right, my last question. At the Christophers, we use the motto, it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness. It reflects all the media we do. So I'm curious, tying into this book, Spaceman, how do you think that approach of lighting a candle instead of cursing the darkness is seen in your life and represented in this book, Spaceman?
Just off the top of my head, I think it's better to do something about something than just to wallow in it. And action is always better than inaction. And so if you're in a situation that you don't like, it's better to do something about it than just to get irritated with it. And you'll feel better about things if you try to do something. And so I think that's what's important. You know, sometimes I realize when I wake up in the morning, the most important thing is to get my feet on the ground and do something. Even if I just brush my teeth, you know, let's get things moving here.
Right.
It's better. Action is better than inaction.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up, and I've been talking to Mike Massimino. His book is called Spaceman, an astronaut's unlikely journey to unlock the secrets of the universe. It is a compelling and fascinating read about all the obstacles Mike faced on his road to becoming an astronaut, to going to space twice in the space shuttle, to helping fix the Hubble telescope. Along the way, he also writes about his spiritual life and how that changed him, the beauty he saw from space and how it affected his approach to living on Earth. It really is a wonderful book, and Mike's a funny guy. It comes across in this interview, it comes across in his book. So check out Spaceman by Mike Massimino. And Mike, thanks so much for sharing your story on the show today.
Tony, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm Tony Rossi, and you're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'll be back in a minute with Olympic gold medalist Simone Biles. But first, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
The most difficult trials in life demand that we dig deep within ourselves to find the capacity for courage that God has bestowed upon the human soul. But courage begins with an act of the will to persevere through pain, suffering, and even failure. To help you along that path, the Christophers have prepared a news note called Finding the Courage Within. It offers insights on building character, cultivating the ability to act courageously, and making sacrifices for the greater good. To request your free copy of Finding the Courage Within, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. That's 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and my next guest is four-time Olympic gold medalist Simone Biles. Like a lot of you, I was captivated by Simone's gymnastic performances in the 2016 Rio Olympics, including her win in the women's all-around competition. Beyond her physical accomplishments, though, I also marveled at how she was able to maintain grace under pressure, since commentators were constantly calling her the greatest gymnast in history. That's a lot for a 19-year-old to live up to. Then there was Simone's positive attitude and team spirit, which were also impressive. Where did all this talent and character come from, I wondered? Well, now Simone has answered that question for me and many others by writing a memoir called Courage to Soar. In it, she recounts the experience of being adopted by her grandparents when she was a child and the ways in which they modeled the Catholic faith for her and gave her the spiritual grounding she still relies on. In addition, she reveals her incredible work ethic, her struggles with self-doubt, her experiences at the 2016 Olympics, and everything in between. Joining me now to talk about her remarkable life and career, I'm happy to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Simone Biles. Simone, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you.
Now, I've interviewed both Sean Johnson and your teammate Gabby Douglas, and I remember that part of the reason their parents got them involved in gymnastics is because they were literally bouncing around the house all the time. Is the same true for you? Were you a bouncer as a little kid?
Yes, very much so. I was very hyperactive and always running and flipping.
Some people may not know that the people that you call mom and dad now were originally your grandparents. So how did you and your siblings wind up in that living situation?
Whenever I was younger, we were in foster care because my biological mom suffered with addictions and stuff. So,
well, how did taking in you know, you and your siblings, how did that affect your parents, Ron and Ellie's lives?
I think it changed their lives just because my brothers now, they were, like, getting ready to leave the house, go off to college, and they were ready to be, like, my parents free and stuff until me and my sister came. So it changed their lives quite a bit.
Right. Well, what about little acts of sacrifice that they made for you? How did you see that even at that young age?
I was 3 years old. I can't really say. Okay. But I mean, I've heard now since I'm older, like, I guess my mom wanted to go back to college or something, but then she took us in. So she gave up that and stuff with work. And so did my dad. They would have to take more time off to be with me and my sister because we were young.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking to Simone Biles about her book, Courage to Soar. Now, in the book, you write that your parents have always taught you that the first step to making dreams real is to ask for God's guidance. So I'm curious, how did your parents not just teach you about faith, but actually model it for you?
Well, we would always, like, pray before every meal and then bedtime. And then me and my sister would go to faith formation classes every Wednesday. And, like, 1 year I got my brother, and he was the teacher for that class, so that was pretty cool.
Okay, okay. And I know in the acknowledgement section of the book you reference a Father Charlie. You thank him for being a wonderful spiritual guide. How did Father Charlie help you in your walk of faith?
Yes, so every Sunday I go to church, and he's there. And then afterwards, or if I have a big competition, he'll always give me a blessing if I go over to him to keep me safe and help guide me correctly and everything.
Right, right. Well, there's a moving chapter in the book, Courage to Soar. I'm talking to Simone Biles, Olympic gold medalist. It's titled A Novena, and you started with this quote from Mother Teresa, who said, "Love begins by taking care of the closest ones, the ones at home." So tell us a little bit about that story, about your grandma, Cayetano, and what about when she came to live with you, your grandma?
Yes, well, whenever she came to live with us, she was kind of getting sick, so it was different, but we would always go upstairs with her and, like, pray the rosary and everything, so to help her out.
Right, right. And how did what was seeing your mom care for your grandma? What did that just teach you about, you know, compassion for others and caring for those in our families?
Yes, that your parents will always need care just like they care for you. So anytime they need help, just go help them out.
Yeah. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Simone Biles, 4-time Olympic gold medalist. She has a book out called Courage to Soar, A Body in Motion and a Life in Balance. Now, you write in the book about how much fun you found in the trampoline and tumbling and backflips, and you mentioned that earlier. But at some point, it had to go beyond simply fun to being hard work. What made you stick with it when the hours of practice and the difficulty level increased?
I think because I had such a big passion for it growing up, and even though it did get hard and I'd have to sacrifice to be in the gym longer, it was always going to the next level that made it fun for me, and that I would feel accomplished every time I got a new skill or it got harder. It's just like any other sport. It gets harder, but you have to stick with it because you love it and you know what your dreams are.
Well, when you struggle in a particular area, like you write in the book about struggling with the uneven bars, does that make you feel defeated or does it motivate you to get better?
For me, I think it motivated me to get better at it because it was one of my weakness and something I felt that, although it wasn't fun all the time and I didn't want to do it a lot, mm-hmm. I knew that I had to reach my goals that I wanted.
Sure. Well, what is a typical day of gymnastics training like? How many hours does it involve? What kind of tasks does it involve?
So training for the Olympics, or like ever since I won Elite, since 14, 15 years old, I would do 32 hours.
Wow.
I would do 6 or 7 hours a day, and then on Saturdays, 4 hours, and then I got Sundays off.
Okay, Sundays off to go to church, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so basically it was almost like you had a full-time job at the age of 14, because working 6-7
yes.
hours a day. So that was a great precedent. I'm talking to Simone Biles about her book, Courage to Soar. Well, you also write in the book about working with Martha Caroli, who I know could be a tough, demanding coach. How would you say her toughness made you better?
Yes, she always got out 120% out of everyone instead of 100%, and she always motivated us to do our best, and we weren't doing it for her, we were doing it for ourselves and to remember the goals that we wanted, and that's why we worked so hard for so long.
Well, at the start of the book, you write about how you prayed hard to make the USA Gymnastics Women's Artistic Junior Team in 2011, and you believed
yeah.
God was with you and was going to help make that happen, but you fell just a little bit short that year, so I'm wondering, did that experience, did it affect your understanding of how God works in our lives?
Not necessarily, because I believe that everything happens for a reason, whether we understand. It'll eventually come together whenever God wants it to.
Right. Well, talking about the Olympics now, how did having veteran Olympians like Gabby Douglas and Allie Raisman on Team USA with you help you in that, what could be a really overwhelming spotlight?
Yes. It was very helpful because they've been through that Olympic process once, so they were very good mentors in telling us exactly what to do, how to keep calm, and what to expect when we got there.
Mm-hmm.
So if it wasn't for them, I don't think we could have been so calm.
Right. Well, I remember thinking when watching coverage, all the commentators were calling you, you know, the greatest gymnast of all time. And I was thinking, how does a 19-year-old deal with the pressure of hearing that all the time? So I'm wondering, did you hear it, or did you kind of block out that part of things so you could stay focused and calm?
Yeah, most of the time we block out everything that comes in just so that we could focus on that one goal and why we're there. So we don't really think about it. I mean, they could say it, but we still have to go out there and do our job.
Sure. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Olympic gold medalist Simone Biles about her book, Courage to Soar, A Body in Motion, A Life in Balance. Now, in the book, you write that one of the best pieces of advice your dad ever gave you is never squander what God has given you. So as you move forward in life now, being an Olympic champion, and you're looked up to by young girls especially, what does that advice mean to you now?
I always understood it in the beginning because there were times where I really wanted to give up. But he's like, you can't waste the talent God gave you. Like, he gave you for a reason. So then I'd be like, okay, yeah, I understand that. Like, I would never want to do that. But I always had a passion for it, so I always just kept going.
Well, in the book, you admit to being a little moody and bratty at times when you were a young teenager. And I was wondering, in retrospect, how much do you appreciate the patience of your parents and coach at those times?
Oh, very much. I don't know how they dealt with me. I was the worst.
Is it it's obviously a phase you've grown out of now.
Yes. Like, I look back and I'm like, who was this child?
So when do you go out and give talks to young gymnasts now and to try to encourage them? Like, what do you say to them about how they can succeed?
Just dream big, write your goals down, make sure you're having fun and really live in the moment, because time goes by so quickly once you realize it's there, it's practically over.
Yeah, yeah. The foreword to the book is written by Mary Lou Retton, and I'm curious, how did she and other Olympic gymnasts influence your athletic pursuits and your work ethic even?
Yes, they are very inspiring, and they made us want to do what they did back in the day, and it's an honor to walk in their footsteps and to lead their legacy on. So for us, we look at it as they paved the way for us to be where we are, so it's an honor to go out there and represent.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up, and I've been talking to Simone Biles, the Olympic gold medalist, about her book, Courage to Soar. It's a wonderful read about her journey to success and her hard work ethic and the faith that motivates her. So, Simone, thanks for writing the book, and thank you for joining me today to talk about it.
No problem. Thank you.
Now, before we end today's show, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
When Father James Keller founded the Christophers, he chose the organization's name because it means Christ bearers in Greek. He wanted to encourage everyone to discover their God-given talents, combine their faith with action, and change the world for the better. For ideas on how you can be a Christ bearer in your own life, the Christophers have prepared a news note called Being a Christopher. It's filled with quotes and insights from Father Keller himself, who once explained, "The presence of even one Christopher in any environment is a blessing, a channel of grace, and a step in the right direction. It's like a tiny pinpoint of light that is greater than the encircling darkness." To request your free copy of Being a Christopher, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. That's 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.